Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
Welcome back, everybody. Taxation is theft. I'm sure everybody recognizes Arvin Vora. He's one of the awesome presidential candidates that I've been running against for several months, almost a year, over a year now. It's been a while. Welcome.
Dan, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. So first, I just want to get this off my mind because the last time I had you on, I hadn't read your book yet. And all right. you sent one all the way down to me in Mexico, and I read it, and I have to say that was an awesome book. I was very few books. Most books I get bored as shit going through. Like, I'm like, okay, two pages at a time, totally distracted. This was actually a really awesome book. Pull out. It's been a while.
Pull out is kind of, it was, you know, when I read Lean In, I loved it. This is a great book. But I wanted to write something like that for men, for young men. And I just took Lean In, turned it around, made it a little bit crude. And a lot of it comes from this idea that I do think there's this intentional lack of guidance being provided to young men. And so much of what went into Pull Out is me trying to provide the guidance that a lot of it was stuff that I wish I'd had when I was younger, some perspectives that I wish I'd understood when I was, you know, a teenager, young adult, or even just a few years ago. I think it would have been something that would have been very useful to me. So I try to make it something that's hopefully going to be useful for the next generation.
Yeah, it's really interesting because because I'm reading this and I'm like, okay, I never had this type of guidance either growing up. So I'm like, I hear so many guys like, oh, nice guys finish last and, you know, all this other stuff. And like, so there's so many aspects of a relationship that we just aren't taught about. And there's so many, you know, there's so many different aspects of it. Parents are uncomfortable talking to their kids about it, about sex and relationships, or, you know, there's so many different reasons you're not going to, or maybe your parents were just really bad at relationships. So you didn't get that info there. And of course, TV is a really bad source because they'll just give you whatever's entertaining. And it's really interesting because like this whole like nice guys finish last thing, it's like when your main focus is on being nice and not on, you know, being entertaining or demonstrating your ability to propagate the human species, however you want to call that, like you totally take your focus and it's like you know, I don't know. Is that like when you go into a job interview, do you demonstrate that you're good for the job, or do you just like shake the guy's hand and polish his shoes and say like, "Hey, yeah, I'm a really nice guy." No. So it's really interesting because there's so many different aspects to that. But yeah, this was a really awesome book, and I've been telling everybody about it.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. So let's talk about, okay, I had Sam Robb on last night. He's one of the other guys. Have you spent much time with him?
Just very quick hellos before and after debates.
Right.
So I haven't really gotten a chance to really properly know him yet.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's kind of been my experience till, you know, recently. I got to talk to him a little bit more. But I came up with this idea because this is the fair media, right? This is the media where it's even run by a candidate and I'm giving airtime to other candidates because we're fair here. But I gave him the opportunity to answer this question or to answer this pitch. Convince me to vote for you.
Okay.
As a presidential candidate.
We talked about nice guys, right? And you know that I don't think that being a nice guy is the answer. I don't think you need to be a not nice guy, but I do think you need to be an honest guy. Now, what you saw in 2016 was a travesty. You saw two candidates, one that insisted on saying that libertarians support a social welfare state, that was Gary Johnson, And you had another candidate that went on national TV to endorse Hillary Clinton. That was Bill Weld. And so what I'm talking about, and the problem with that is that it poisoned the well. So many anarcho-capitalists voted for Trump. And at the same time, so many people who are just unclear about libertarianism came into the liberty movement. And that ended up actually, while making the liberty movement in some ways more numerous, actually made us weaker. Today, there are so many libertarians that think I'm the weird one for being opposed to government schools, when in fact, abolishing government schools is part of minarchism and anarchism. Now, if I'm the nominee, that's going to change. We're going to be bringing in people who really believe in liberty, not just people who already believe in liberty, people who don't know about it yet, who don't believe in it yet. But I'm going to be working to change hearts and minds, not pander to hearts and minds. I'm not going to lie to someone and say, listen, you're already a libertarian, because probably you're probably not. But I'm going to tell you why you should be and what it actually means to be a libertarian, why some of these scary positions like abolishing government schools actually make sense. But Dan, I know you're a real practical guy, so I'm going to give you a practical reason as well, which is this, that if I'm the nominee, I will absolutely put a halt to the drug war. Just as the nominee, I don't need to win to halt the drug war. Not necessarily to pardon everybody, but to halt it. And here's what I'm going to do. I can promise you right now that I will make sure that if I'm the nominee, that every man, woman, and child in the United States, or enough of them said that it won't make any difference, will know this, that they have the right to jury nullify, that they should use jury nullification, and that jury nullification brought freedom of the press to America. And what that's going to do is you're going to have at least 1 in 6 or 1 in 12 people in every jury saying not guilty because it's not a crime. Now, of course, if I'm elected, I'm going to pardon everyone who's in jail for drug crimes. But even if I'm just the nominee, I will bait, manipulate, intentionally antagonize the media to cover what I want them to. And they'll be telling the whole country that this crazy guy is talking about jury nullification. The whole country's going to say, what's jury nullification? And that will halt the drug war. If I'm elected, I'll end the drug war.
Absolutely. So this is it's not necessarily a problem with jury nullification, but this always comes up because jury nullification only works if, well, one, if you can get people like us on a jury, because I don't know how they sniff us out, but they do. But then but then you also have to get a trial to jury. And in most of these, I mean, it's 95% of all cases, but it's probably like 100% of all drug cases, they never go to trial. They go to, you know, they take the plea bargain. And
sure.
So how do we convince, I guess, you can convince people to go to trial, but that's not always good advice because they might be worse off. How sure. How would you know, as somebody who, let's say you were charged with a drug crime, how would you, at what point would you say, I have the confidence that I'm going to take this to trial and that there are enough people in my city, in my state, whatever, that know enough about jury nullification to make that happen?
That's a really good question. And this is going to be a question of what it takes to get those numbers that high. Everyone knowing about jury nullification doesn't mean everyone's going to do it, right?
Right.
So, for example, today everyone knows what abortion is, but it doesn't mean everyone aborts every single baby. That's why we still have a human race. But everyone knows what it is. If everyone knows what jury nullification is, some percentage will choose to jury nullify. And the simple fact is, you don't need everyone on the jury to be willing to nullify. You just need a specific number of people. And for a lot of times, it can be just one person that can make that difference. Once that happens, defense attorneys, whose job it is to know these things, they'll know these things. They're going to know it because every man, woman, and child in America is going to know it. And at that point, we're going to see things really start to change. Because you're right, if people don't go to trial, then you can't really do anything with jury nullification. But if jury nullification is that widespread, more defense attorneys are going to want to go to trial.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point. Hopefully they'll get some guidance from a defense attorney to push that. So, okay, so this is another thing I just thought of as you were talking. You mentioned the libertarian philosophy is to get rid of public schools.
That's central to minarchism and anarchism, right? And classical liberalism.
So this is something I've been struggling with, because I agree with you, but we have so many libertarians, big L libertarians, that don't really always side with an actual libertarian philosophy. And that, you know, they want to take, they want the watered down Gary Johnson approach. And what I've come to realize lately is, or recently, is that David Nolan, that's who started the Libertarian Party, right? Was it David Nolan, or is it another?
David Nolan and D. Frank Robinson.
Okay. David Nolan was a radical.
Yep.
And he was very, I mean, so I was just Googling right now to see if he had a position on public schools. Do you happen to know, was he anti-public school?
I would be shocked and amazed if he wasn't. I mean, David Nolan was about as radical as they get. I don't remember off the top of my head any specific speeches that I've seen on that topic, but he's made very intense speeches about other more incendiary topics. So I couldn't imagine that he would be in favor of government schools. I mean, government schools, whether you look up, you can look up classic liberalism on you know, Wikipedia or something like that, and you'll see even they oppose government schools.
Right.
And classical liberalism is generally the softest form of libertarianism. Classical liberalism, no government schools. Minarchism, that's like the next level above, no government schools. And anarchism, of course, that's just no government at all, including by necessity, no government schools.
No schools with it, yeah. This is really interesting to me, because this is central to the whole thing. And this is, you know, everybody has the fight every year of principle versus party. You know, what's more important? Do we want to grow the party? And it's like, well, what difference does it make if you grow the party if you lose the principles and it becomes another Republican Party?
The thing is, right now, and this is where I've something I've been struggling with a lot. You know, people have asked me, why libertarian, why not Republican? And if I look at the platform of the GOP and the platform of the LP, I can say without any question that I much more strongly agree with the Libertarian Party platform. I agree with pretty much everything on there. I've helped to pass many of the planks that are on the platform right now. So in that sense, it's a no-brainer. But there's a second question that's actually more troubling to me, and I know it's troubling to a lot of people right now, which is, if you look at the areas in which you agree, or if I look at the areas in which I agree with the majority of big L libertarians, while I might agree more numerously with libertarians, at the moment, for a lot of the more important issues, I find myself actually agreeing with more Republicans. There are, at this time, more Republicans who oppose government schools than big L libertarians who oppose government schools. It shouldn't be that way. I think that's bizarre. I have no idea how that happened. You know, to some extent, I know that it kind of happened on my watch because I was in the LNC for the last 6 years. But I don't know. I don't get what happened there. I think it's very, very strange. So I think that's a big thing that we need to change. We should not be less libertarian than the Republican Party, because if we are, there's no point to our existence.
Right. And that's, I mean, so you have the Republican Party. I know, like, you know, Ron Paul was there, and I'm sure he didn't agree with most of the platform because he's, you know, he's more libertarian.
Sure.
But he used it as a strategy of, you know, this is, you know, it's a big party. It's going to help me get elected. It did help him get elected. He served in Congress for, I don't know how many decades. And so we know that works, but it's like, I don't know. To me, it's like with the Libertarian Party, it's the platform itself. It's not just the party, and it's not just the winning. It's an organization where all of us can come together. All of us, the people who agree with this ideology. And if we sell it out and say, yeah, we want all these other people in. I mean, like, cause here's the thing. I want it to grow too. I want every person in the entire country to be a part of the Libertarian Party. But like, I don't want to just open the doors and let everybody in. I kind of want to be able to say, like, you know, well, you know, what's the password, right? Like, what's, you got to get them, like, you know, it's like, it's a speakeasy or something, but, because you want to make sure that they're not there. I mean, look at Look at the United States, right? Everybody's worried about, in the Cold War anyway, the Russians coming here and they're going to infiltrate our media and brainwash us and do all this other stuff. Well, if you have a party and it's pure mostly to like this ideology or this platform, and you let other people in who disagree with that, eventually you're going to get to a point where they outnumber you and they are going to change the platform. So I think that's a critical piece of that equation, is to make sure that you have some way of maintaining the integrity of that platform.
I think a good analogy for us is to think of any religion. Take Christianity, for example. People, you know, missionaries have worked to increase the spread of Christianity, but they haven't done that by telling people that Christianity is something other than what it is. Things like belief in the existence of Jesus Christ as your savior is a central tenet of any kind of Christianity. The same thing is true. So the idea is they're trying to change what people believe to believe this particular thing. And the same thing is true for us. I mean, belief in cutting government, belief in things like getting rid of government schools, ending the welfare state, ceasing to use the American military as kind of a world police / free military welfare for everyone. Those are our tenets. And we need to convince people to believe our tenets. We shouldn't be convincing people that what they believe is somehow a type of libertarianism, even when it's in direct contradiction. That's what we're doing right now. What we're doing right now is basically saying, yeah, whatever it is that you believe is also a type of libertarianism. And people are falling for that. And it's not because people are stupid, it's because we're telling them that. You know, we have people like Gary Johnson saying that libertarians believe in a welfare state. That's why most of the country thinks that libertarians believe in a welfare state. It's not that they're so dumb, it's that we're telling them that.
Right. Yeah, and it's, this was, I remember one of the first, when I first got involved with the Libertarian Party, it was actually through a Toastmasters group, a Liberty Toastmasters group. And so, like, you know, it was like we had, you know, you give your little speeches and the topics were always like, you know, try to tell people how to or try to convince people to get rid of welfare without making it sound like you want poor people to starve and die and all this other stuff. And I remember that question because it was really interesting. And you do have this pushback when you have some, you know, when you say, yeah, we want to get rid of Social Security because it's a failed program. We want to get rid of food stamps and all these other things. And people say, oh, you just want the poor people to die. And it's no, it's not. And so what I've been trying to figure out is, so how do we get that point across to where somebody who absolutely believes that government welfare is the answer to all of, you know, humanity's poverty problems, how do you show them that, no, actually, you know, you're not a libertarian because you believe in that, but let me tell you about libertarianism in a way that can actually solve those problems so that you can say, oh, that's actually a better idea. You come to understand the ideology now, and then you say, okay, now I want to be a libertarian because now I like that plan. It is better. It does make more sense. Sure. It doesn't involve stealing. And I think that's like, that's a key ingredient. This is like, you know, if our job is to get out there and recruit libertarians, we don't have a playbook.
Yeah. And so, I mean, here's an example, I think, that shows how we can do this. Take, for example, the current massive college debt crisis, right? Everyone agrees that college debt, that paying student debt until you're 75 years old, is non-ideal. We want to change that. Most Democrats want to change that. Most Republicans want to change that. Most libertarians want to change that. The solution that the Democrats have come up with is to have the government pay more money, which is what the government has been doing. But that's their method. That's not their goal. Their goal isn't that they just want the government to pay money because they just want it to happen. Their goal is they want people to be able to get a higher education and not have to be paying debt for their entire, paying back that debt for their entire lives. And that's where we can say, well, there are alternatives. There are two alternatives. The first is, let's drop the idea that college is the only type of higher education. It's not true. If you are interested in computers, you have proficiency exams, or you can have a GitHub account that has a very strong profile. If you are really into mathematics, you can take things like the actuarial exams and whatnot that'll prove your ability in mathematics. So there's a lot of ways to achieve a higher education, to get the equivalent of a degree or something actually more effective than a degree without spending $200,000 for college. So that's gonna be the first thing. The second thing is the idea that college, it has to be that expensive. It does not. It's being that expensive because it's been enabled to be that way through government loans. And we can say this, if there was no way for students to get government loans, then colleges would have, students just wouldn't have the money to spend, right? So college would have to either lower their tuitions or go out of business. And the college would choose both of those. But the simple fact is that if college only cost $1,500 a year, 4 years of college maximum debt would be $6,000, and that's a manageable amount. So those are things where we have agreement because we all have the same goal, which is we don't want people to be saddled with college debt for their lives. We all agree with that. The other method doesn't work. It's been tried. It's being tried right now, and it's backfiring. Here's another method that has worked in the past. And so I think that when you communicate, when you agree that with people that we have the same goals, and here's a different method, that works. But now sometimes we don't have the same goals. That's a simple fact. There's a lot of times where our goals are different. Simple example, I don't think that I want to pay 1 cent to forcibly westernize the entire earth. I don't want every country to be an exact mirror image of America. I want each country to be its own country. And so while other people might say, well, I want to turn Iran into basically a Western country, I don't. I want Iran to be Iran. Let them decide what they want to do. So there are areas where we won't share the same goals, and that's fine. We don't have to have the same goals, but we do have to be clear and honest about our goals. And when people say, well, then how are you going to force Iranians to speak English? I'm not going to force them to, but I want our economy to be so strong that it becomes the business language of the world. And guess what? It already is the business language of the world. I mean, The free market works. We have to force people to learn English. They did it because it made them rich.
Yeah, absolutely. That's interesting. Are there people who want Iranians to speak English? Is that like a...
There is a very large number of people that want to, depending on who you ask, either secularize or convert to Christianity the entire Middle East right now.
Yeah, I've heard of converting to Christianity. I guess English could go along with that. But yeah, normally when I hear about forcing someone to speak English, it's Mexicans in the U.S. or something like that. It's... Mm-hmm. Wow. But yeah, that's really interesting because there's and to that point, I was talking to this one guy who had this plan that he wanted to give money to same sex couples for getting married. So it was kind of like it's kind of like a conditional welfare type thing, but it was supposed to incentivize people to be straight and stay married. And and this is coming from his Christian background, because this is, that's what he believes in. And I think you're absolutely right with that idea of we want different things, because some people say, that's what every family should look like. So I want to live in a world where every family looks like that. And not everybody thinks that way. So yeah, that is where we're different. But I think, the reason we don't have stuff like that is because there aren't a whole lot of people who think that way. And I think you're right that we do have that. And this is what I always look for, when I'm talking with anybody, is what is the common ground? Let's dig deeper. Let's see. Okay, this is when you're telling me you want Medicare for all, that's just your way. What do you really want? Okay, you want cheap healthcare. You want affordable healthcare. Yep. Yeah, and that's where you can actually connect with people. And that's kind of what I've kind of taken that to be my experiment with this campaign, to see how far I can go with that and how many, how far left I can connect with people, how far right I can connect with people, because I'd really like to be able to take everything that I'm doing in this messaging that I'm doing and give that to everybody in the Libertarian Party and say, go forth and conquer, get everybody and, use this strategy because it works to get people to open up to this ideology. And it doesn't work overnight, but it works over time. And that's, we just got to keep at it. And that's the way that we should grow. And it's not going to be super fast, but it's going to stick. It's going to be permanent. It's not going to be, one term voters or anything like that.
Exactly. And that's the thing, over here in Maryland, I live in Maryland, close to the DC border. So Maryland, Virginia, and DC, we have a lot of overlap. And we got to see what the Gary Johnson campaign was doing. And what they would do is basically outside of military bases, put billboards trying to say, basically saying, you know, you guys are heroes, vote libertarian, something like that. And it's not that I have any problem in advertising the military. I think that's a great idea. But to advertise to the military in a way that suggests it's good to be in this military, I think that's morally bankrupt. I don't think that Gary Johnson believes in current foreign policy. I think he knows that this is a terrible foreign policy. Honestly, I think Bill Weld knows that what we're doing right now, world policing, is a terrible, terrible idea. But rather than having the courage to say so, here's what he should have said. He should have said basically what Larry Sharp said. I understand why you joined. You wanted to fight for freedom. Now leave so you can fight for freedom. To me, there's a huge difference between pandering to people's current way of thinking, which is a failed strategy, versus trying to respectfully change their point of views, or for that matter, trying to disrespectfully change their point of views. To actually try to change somebody's viewpoint is the mission of this. And I think you've done a lot of great work on this. So many people who have seen your taxation as theft videos, and we're talking about at this point, you know, millions, maybe more people who have seen those videos, they've said, you know, you can see in the comments, people are saying, okay, I didn't think about it like that. Yeah, this is totally different. And you see that, and that's what it means to change hearts and minds. It means somebody to have an actual change in their views, mm-hmm. not like they keep their same views and give it a different label.
Right. Yeah, keep their same views and give it a different candidate. That's really interesting. So with that, let's talk. I want to get some of your opinions on sure. on some of these candidates, if that's cool. I know I've been kind of like, so I like to talk about the candidates that I like, because, you know, if you don't have anything good to say, don't say it. I don't like to say anything bad about the other candidates, but there are some candidates that they've said some things that aren't particularly libertarian. And at the same time, you know, I met so I met Lincoln Chafee for the first time New Hampshire. And
yeah, New Hampshire.
You know, he was not, you know, a nice guy. I walked up to him, said hi, shook his hand, and you know, that was it. We didn't really talk about policy, but of course he gave his speech and he said something to the effect of drug legalization is a state's right, not we should legalize everything. Which was, of course, my position. So it's, I don't know, with a guy like him, and I know there are going to be a lot of people who are like, oh yeah, but he's next governor, he's going to raise a lot of money, all, you know, all that kind of thing. But is that the best strategy? What's your opinion on him?
No, absolutely not. I mean, and I've spoken on Lincoln Chafee's response quite a bit. This idea of leaving it to the states is insane. And I just want to give you an example, the same example I've given in a few other places, which is, let's say that a state decided they wanted to ban the Quran. Would Lincoln Chafee be okay with that? I assume no. Even if he wasn't a governor of that state, even if he had no direct political power, he would still use his power as a public figure to speak out against it. And the same is true if that a state tried to ban the Bible, tried to ban carrots or tomatoes. If something that absurd was happening, he would either speak against it or try to engage in some political activism against it, or at the very least say doing that is morally wrong. And he has not done that with the drug war. As governor, he could have pardoned all nonviolent drug offenders. He chose not to. And today, as an important political figure, he is choosing not to speak out against the barbaric war on drugs at the state level. Now, I don't know about you, Dan, but for me, whether an atrocity is happening at the state level or the federal level, it's still an atrocity. You know, when you think about the terrible atrocities that used to be that were happening in Iraq, the torture rooms, the rape rooms, things like that, those were atrocities that American politicians spoke out against, even though no governor and no president has any direct political decision making there. They still spoke out against them because they knew that that was wrong. And many people who are outside of politics, of course, also spoke out against that. We have something here that's also morally wrong. It is a morally atrocious thing to do. To just put this in perspective for the viewers, what we're talking about is somebody who is addicted to a drug, who does not want to be addicted to that drug, right? Mm-hmm. They're trying to break this addiction. Everyone's on board, and guess what happens? They slip up. Why do they slip up? Because people slip up. And I don't know any person in the world that has never made some kind of mistake, that hasn't slipped up, hasn't made some kind of an error. And rather than helping people who are in need, and these are people who are in need, these are a lot of people who have very hard addiction, they need some kind of help. They need psychological help. They need medical help. They need something. Many of them are too afraid to get it because they fear, correctly, I might add, that they're going to be arrested if they do. And what we're doing, what we're allowing our states to do is to lock them up. And that's barbaric. I mean, that is so sick that I don't even know how that can continue to exist in America. And the fact that Lincoln Chafee is saying, yeah, leave it up to the states, leave up locking sick people up for being sick to the states, that is not okay. And that is not someone who should be leading this movement by any stretch of the imagination. I do not agree with that position one bit. A moral or a humanitarian atrocity is an atrocity no matter what level of government it's done on.
Right. So now I know some people who lived in Rhode Island under his rule, let's call it. And they have, you know, a distaste for him just because of, you know, all those things. And I'm sure, like, even if you or I were to be elected president, just the fact that the government's there doing whatever it does, people would have a distaste for us.
Sure.
So there's that. But is there, so like, would there be any benefit for if somebody like Lincoln Chafee, instead of running for president, were to simply say, as you know, as much as people dislike what it may have been like, you know, living under his governorship, would it be better if he just said, look, libertarianism is new to me. I'm endorsing this party. I'm endorsing this candidate. I don't understand all the ins and outs yet. I'm new. I haven't learned it all, but it's very fascinating. I like everything that they have to say so far. I'm still learning. And I think you should vote for somebody in this party or for this candidate or for this president. Do you think that would be a better position for him at this point?
There's a lot of good that he could do. I think that one of the things that the best thing he could do is to just publicly apologize for not pardoning people when he had the chance to. I think a message like that would carry so much weight, would go towards healing the divide we see right now between, you know, people in the community and honestly, a lot of people who are in law enforcement that are basically decent people and have just gotten themselves into a bad situation. You know, just like people who use drugs can get or have gotten themselves into a bad situation that might be a little over their head, a lot of people in law enforcement is kind of the same. They're just in a bad situation that has gotten away from them. And some of those people, with encouragement, will leave. They'll join organizations like LEAP, that's law enforcement against mm-hmm. prohibition. You know, a lot of those people are going to find their way. But I think that somebody who comes out and says, gives such a powerful healing message, I think that would be incredible. And I think that if he did that, I would gain a lot of respect for him. Now, he hasn't done that so far, but who knows what tomorrow holds.
Right. And this is, he just gave me, so I have reached out a couple times to try to get him on this show. And I'm like, what kind of questions could I ask him? But you actually just reminded me of, there was a video of a judge or a former judge, and he's speaking at like a city council, and he brings himself to tears over like, wow, I sent all these people to jail, and he just gave this really powerful speech. But it's almost exactly like what you're talking about, at least coming out and saying, you know, I made a huge mistake. I destroyed so many lives. And that was really powerful. And I think, you know, if a governor did that, then yeah, that would absolutely be huge. So you're saying if he made some sort of statements like this, he could possibly, and of course, you know, moving forward, say that, you know, the war on drugs is wrong at every level, to some, or maybe, I don't know. Do you think that it would benefit the Libertarian Party if he endorsed it? Cause obviously, you know, if somebody, I'm trying to think of like a really just evil person, right? If, you know, if some really like the this guy, let's just pick a drug kingpin from like Mexico or something, right? He comes out and says, I'm endorsing the Libertarian Party. That's not necessarily a good thing for us. I don't know, arguably it is, but do you think that his endorsement would benefit or hurt us?
It would benefit. I think it would get some press coverage at the very least. And I do think that if someone like Lincoln Chafee, you know, we got tricked in 2016 because Bill Weld apologized to us for his position on assault weapons. And we fell for that trick because, you know, a lot of us just don't have the same, as many decades of political experience as Bill Weld does. Whatever other shortcomings he has a lot of experience as a politician. what we should have insisted that he does was that on some sort of national media, CNN, the New York Times, he showed his new position on assault weapons there to the general American people. If Lincoln Chafee comes and apologizes to the Libertarian Convention saying I should have pardoned them, that's worth less than nothing. That's just another pander.
Right.
But if he goes on CNN, if he talks to the New York Times, if he goes on MSNBC, if he goes on Fox, if he goes somewhere reasonably big and public and says, I should have pardoned those people, and to those who are still stuck in prison, I apologize to you and your families. If he does that publicly, not just among a closed group of libertarians, that's going to go a long way towards gaining the respect of the Libertarian Party, and certainly a long way towards gaining my respect.
Right. Yeah, it's like, you know, if you just got a new gun, you don't take it straight into battle. You want to test it out first, right?
Exactly.
That's, yeah, we do want to see that with, you know, with anybody who comes into the party. And this is something that, and, you know, maybe someone saw something in me before they invited me, but it was not a very long time before I joined the Libertarian Party where they were like, hey, elections are coming up. You should put your name on the ballot. And it's, like, as much as I would love to see, you know, full ballots in every state for I think there's like 500,000 elected positions in the entire country or something ridiculous like that. As much as I'd like to see a libertarian name on every single one, it's like we run that risk where people are going to be like, oh, yeah, there was this libertarian that we had on the ballot and he wanted to, I don't know, ban
have
something.
A fair tax?
What's that?
He wanted to have a fair tax.
Yeah, something like that. Well, not even something like that. Not because that offends the libertarian philosophy. But what if it was something that offended the just like people in general, like something stupid.
And everything
like,
we stand for offends people in general. That's part of it.
Yeah, but I mean, like, okay, like a one child policy or like just something like totally ridiculous.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Something that offends the libertarian viewpoint and the public viewpoint.
Because I mean, like, because then it's gonna be like, oh yeah, they had that crazy guy that like, you know.
Okay, so here's what I would say. So I've worked with a lot of candidates, a lot of new candidates, as vice chair for two terms, as an LNC representative at large for one term. I worked with a lot of candidates, and here's what I saw. Candidates, the new candidates always wanted to be bold, but they thought they weren't allowed to be. So they would find some really small, insignificant thing. And when I would say things like, well, what about, you know, if I saw that somebody maybe had some sort of like a gun pin or something like that. Like, what about saying something like you would abolish all gun laws or sponsor legislation to abolish all gun laws? And two things would happen. People would light up and they were like, wait, am I allowed to say that? Because that would be awesome. Like, that's what they want to do.
Right.
I mean, people want the taxation, this theft hat. They don't want a fair tax hat. I've never seen a single person wearing a fair tax hat. But I mean, most of the days when I go around, I'm wearing one of your tax. I'm actually wearing your specific taxation, this theft bracelet that you gave to me. In 2016, that's what I wear as your competitor. I mean, that's what people want. I've never worn a fair tax bracelet. I've never seen anybody else wearing a fair tax bracelet in my life. So, I mean,
you just gave me this idea. Excitement. I need to add, I'm going to set up a new website that's just like fair tax something, and I'm gonna sell a fair tax hat. But when you get it in the mail, you're gonna open the box, you're gonna pull the hat out, and it's gonna say there's no such thing as a fair tax.
Nice.
Bait and switch. You're right. There's a lot to be said about going radical, and I think that, I don't know, am I wrong to say that there's pressure within the party to kind of silence that from like maybe the more conservative side of the.
Yeah, I mean, that pressure is huge. I mean, that pressure is massive. I mean, and it's strategically backfired for us. Today, if you'd go outside of libertarian circles and you talk about marijuana legalization, you ask them, well, who's been fighting for that? They're going to say Democrats. Now, we know, wait a second, but libertarians, we were fighting that for decades longer than Democrats. Right. But we were fighting it secretly. Why? Because the people who thought they were being strategic said, don't talk about legalizing marijuana. It's going to scare people off. Now, if we had ignored their bad advice and talked about it boldly, when this change came, people said the libertarians were right. The people are saying, well, we don't want people to think that libertarians are just all about legalizing marijuana. And now when we do want them to think that, because that's become a winning strategy, that's become a massively politically important strategy, Now, when we want them to do that, well, we don't have the media power that the Democrats do. What we should have done is early on said, yes, this is what we're about. Let the New York Times cover us and say how crazy and wacko we are. Let everyone say libertarians, those are those crazy people who want to legalize marijuana. And then when it happens, let us be the ones that are known to be right. And that's how real growth happens. And it doesn't happen from pandering. It happens from fighting for the principles that matter.
So would now be the time to start a campaign party-wide to legalize heroin?
Yes. Legalize heroin, abolish government schools. I mean, here's the thing. Homeschooling is growing. Homeschooling is also outperforming regular schools, yeah. And it's going to continue to get better and better and better. In fact, in my own business, Vora Method, we've been working specifically on programs to help make homeschooling even more competitive. We want homeschooling to so far outstrip public schooling that everyone chooses that. And so that's the type of stuff that is going to work. And when everyone who is successful is homeschooled, well, then public school is going to kind of fall by the wayside. And we're already seeing the results. I mean, you and I, of course, we can look just around us and see amazing people whose homeschooling is probably one of the things that have made them so amazing. People like Nick Sarwark, that's the chair of the Libertarian Party. We see that, we say, like, look, this is what homeschooling looks like. Someone who is so strategic, so polite, so calm, so brilliant. I mean, those type of examples are what's going to set the future. When people say, yeah, do this thing because here's how well it works, that's what's going to change things. And I think it's just about being on the right side of the issues rather than about pandering to what people want to hear.
Right. So I would say the most important takeaway would just be every position that you have, be loud, be proud, and be strong with it. And don't compromise with, well, let's see. Because I want to say don't compromise the libertarian principle, but I also want to say don't compromise what you believe in. And of course, that's where we get into, we've got the libertarians who might be like, I'm absolutely for this, which is on the platform, but I'm absolutely against this, and I'm going to be just as loud about that. And this is, against the libertarian platform. What should we do in a situation like that?
Be honest. Just say, this is my view. It is different from the Libertarian Party platform's view. And that's fine. And the thing is, that's okay in politics. It is okay to have a view that's different from the platform view. It's not okay to say that that is the platform view when it isn't. Right. I mean, I disagree with Trump's views on guns. I disagree with his actions to put more restrictions on guns. But the thing that I really have trouble with is Republicans saying, oh, this is a Republican view. It's not. The Republican view is end all gun laws. It's also my view. Now, if somebody is a libertarian that says, well, I want to have more gun laws, but I still identify with most of the things the Libertarian Party want to abolish government schools and the income tax and all that, then what I would say is just say, this is not the libertarian view. This is my view. It is different from the libertarian view, but let me tell you about why I have this view. And that, I think, is totally fine.
Right.
There's no rule that says you can't just, you can use more than one word to tell the truth. You can say, here's my view. It's different from the regular view. Here's what it is.
Right. So that's really just more about being open and honest about your beliefs instead of trying mm-hmm. to make the puzzle piece fit when it doesn't. Just be honest and say, yeah, this is what it is. Yeah. And I think that's a great strategy. It's because, for one, you still get a lot of support on all of the other issues. You still have, and this is what's great too. And because I don't like living in an echo chamber. And one of the things that kind of helped me develop the way that I talk to Democrats and Republicans and even shifted some of my positions is having those disagreements, but having conversations about them. So when two people say, okay, we don't agree on this, that doesn't mean you have to be like, oh, you're one of those people, I'm not going to talk to you, or, you're bad, I'm going to hate mm-hmm. you. No, have a conversation about it and talk it out. And I know, like, it gets heated sometimes, like these pro-vax, anti-vax debates or pro-life, pro-choice. Sure. But it doesn't have to be that way. And often when you have those, it's like it's a false dichotomy, right? Like it's you have to pick one extreme and then that's it and there's no gray area, but that's absolutely not the case.
Exactly. And so that there's so many things like that. I mean, when it comes to something like, say, evolution, do you believe in evolution? there is not one way to do that Libertarian Party. I mean, you can believe in evolution and be a libertarian. You can not believe in evolution and be a libertarian. And if you have a disagreement in views, discuss them. It's cool. It's cool to have differences in views. That's part of science. I mean, it's part of everything to discuss ideas. I mean, that I think is fine. Then there are certain parts of libertarianism where if you disagree with it, well, then that doesn't really make any sense for you to be part of libertarianism. If you want there to be higher taxes rather than lower taxes, then it doesn't really make sense for you to be in the libertarian movement. There are other high tax movements. So there are some things that I would say are so significant that it doesn't make any sense. For me, government schools is certainly one of them. Supporting government schools and being a libertarian just doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, why then? What is so unique about the Libertarian Party that you want to be part of it? Because you can be pro-government schools in the Democrat or Republican parties. And a lot of the other issues that libertarians fight on are small enough that they can fit in to any party.
Right. Yeah, and I think, you know, if somebody's in the party who maybe doesn't agree with the platform, for a lot of people, I mean, I know some people are really stuck in their ways, but for a lot of people, I think it's really just a matter of having a conversation on that issue, which is something that we don't typically do. I mean, we welcome a lot of people into the party, which is great, but then we don't always have all the right conversations to, you know, whether it's to, you know, to educate or persuade. We don't have a structure for that, which, I mean, I guess is part of the anarchist philosophy of, you know, just engage in peaceful chaos. But at the same time, like, there is, you know, like homeschool, right? Homeschool is a form of anarchy because you don't have this curriculum that's forced on people, but at the same time, you do want a curriculum because you want to make sure that you're learning lots of good stuff, right?
Sure.
So I don't think that the Libertarian Party really has that, which I think would help fill in a lot of these gaps and kind of get a lot more people on the same page as far as some of the issues.
Yeah, and so that's a perfect example right there, right? So you could be somebody that believes in abolishing government schools, but that you personally want to use Common Core to educate your kids. Now, as an educator, I would strongly advise against it, and but I'd also be interested in listening to hear why you think that, because maybe there's something I've overlooked. I mean, it's a two-way thing. I don't think that anyone is such an expert in any area that they're impervious to outside suggestions, but you can be a libertarian who wants to voluntarily educate your kids with Common Core. You can be a libertarian who wants to voluntarily educate your kids with something else. But I don't think you can be a libertarian who wants to forcibly take money from someone else to have somebody else force your kids to learn via Common Core, even if it doesn't work for them. That to me it's so far outside of what libertarianism could possibly be that at that point you're dealing with a fundamental incompatibility.
Right. I've got a comment in here. You said it right. I'm from Europe and I was forced to go to school, but I'm also dyslexic and I had way but time in comparison. If I was homeschooled, he would have had more time in comparison if he was homeschooled. Yeah. Taxation is theft, government is tyranny.
Yeah. And I think that's a great point, right? I mean, it freedom isn't just good because freedom is good. I mean, for us, freedom is inherently good, but freedom is also good because it creates choice. It gives you more options. You know, as an educator, I know that there's no one education system that's going to be perfect for everyone. Of course, I wish that Vora method was the right answer for every man, woman, and child on earth, but I know that that's not true. I know that some people respond to the way that we do things, and some people respond to the way that somebody else does things, and that's okay. Someone who has a Thai restaurant doesn't hate the Mexican restaurant down the street because they understand that people like different types of food, and that's okay. Same thing is true in education. And the only people who don't seem to get that are, of course, government schools, which is based on the idea that we need to force everyone into a one-size-fits-nobody mold.
Right. And so this is, since you said restaurants that hate other restaurants, there was this, I want to say it was in Seattle or somewhere where they had like a corporate park and the corporate like buildings had like their own, you know, cafeteria inside with a couple of restaurants. And they pushed the city to pass a law to ban the food trucks because everyone would leave the building and go to the food trucks because it's, you know, cheaper food, it's faster. And the cafeterias were losing business. And so that's sure. That's their solution to it. It's force. And it's literally what you just said. It's taking away options and forcing people to have one thing. And it's like, that's, you're taking away freedom. And it's not a freedom that's necessarily protected by the Constitution. Like, not that explicitly, you have a right to eat it at, you know, whatever restaurant you want. But it's in there. It's really implied. It's arguably part of the Ninth Amendment.
I mean, for me, I'm more of a strict interpretation. I have a pretty strict interpretation of the Ninth Amendment. And so to me, it is very clearly stated in the Ninth Amendment. It's restated in the Tenth Amendment just in case there was any question about the Ninth Amendment. I mean, the idea is simple. Anything that's not specifically assigned to the federal government is assigned to the states or the people. And people say, well, doesn't that mean it could be assigned to the states? No. It means that depending on the type of thing, it should either be done by the states or the people, depending on which one makes any sense. So if the question is, what side of the road should people drive on? I could see a reasonable argument that there should be some kind of a state law on that. I also don't think it's necessary.
Wait.
I think that people can discover that on their own.
Arvin said there should be a state law.
No. I can see there's an argument for that. That's a big difference from me saying it. I also think that it would be unnecessary. I think that people can uniformly decide that everyone wants to drive on the side of the street that's not going to get you killed. But at least I can see why someone might argue that, right? I don't think it's necessary, but I can see why someone might argue that. But the argument that the right of whether or not to smoke marijuana, the Constitution wanted that to be a state decision, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Smoking marijuana is an individual act. It is simply not a state-level act. It is not a gigantic millions of people in a collective act. I mean, at least not usually. Occasionally it might be. But that is a personal thing. So that type
party.
Of thing is clearly designed to be set aside for the people, for the individuals. I mean, it's not hard to figure this stuff out. Of course, if you want to be deliberately obtuse, you can interpret it any crazy way you want to. But clearly, it's like the individual things are going to be left up to the individuals. If there's something that needs to be happening at the state level, that'll be left up to the state. Not that the individual decision-making would be left up to the state. That's absurd.
Right. Yeah, this is an interesting one because I didn't even learn about the Ninth Amendment until, I don't know, just a few years ago, because they don't teach us that in school, right?
That's the one they hide from us in school.
It's like, okay, the first, the second, the fourth, and the fifth, and that's about it. They even skipped the third for some reason. But I guess because it's kind of an oddball one that like never comes up, but they actually,
yeah, I mean,
I remember
most of us aren't being asked to hold to house soldiers in our house,
yeah,
during peace times.
But what's interesting is, like, you know, when I started learning about liberty and I was like, oh yeah, they violated the first, the second, and I started going through all these things. I saw an article come out about, in Nevada, it was like the SWAT team kicked in the door of some house and they set up their surveillance equipment in there to monitor the house next door. And I'm like, holy shit, they just violated the Third Amendment.
That's incredible. Okay, that's definitely incredible. All right.
I guess it's like a little bit, were they being quartered? Like, does that mean they had beds set up? Like, okay, someone's going to argue that shit. But when we were kids, like, whenever someone tried to say, like, I can do whatever I want because it's a free country, instead of saying, well, you can do whatever you want as long as you don't hurt people or take their stuff, it would always be like, well, where's that in the Constitution? And of course, it's not in the Constitution because they never taught us the Ninth Amendment, which says, yeah, we're not going to list out everything because we can't possibly foresee everything. And even the stuff we already know is just would be like a billion pages and everyone would forget about all of them. So it's like, I don't know. It seems it's like we get these things programmed in our brains since childhood about how we're supposed to interpret the Constitution as like very, like the Bill of Rights is very specific. There's only 10 rights that the government's going to protect. No, that's not it at all. It's very inclusive of so much stuff that's just not written there. I like when I learned about that, that just kind of blew my mind. So of course that's like, yeah.
Yeah. And that's totally true. I mean, that's really, really clear. Before you wrap this up or anything, can I tell everybody my website and whatnot?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just about to give you a couple minutes. Go ahead and plug everything. I know you got lots. Plug everything.
All right, here's everything. My new book, it's called Pull Out: Men, Modern Life, and Mutiny. If you like things that are offensive, a lot of it can be. If you like the, if you don't like things that are offensive, read it anyway. It might give you a kick. My website, my political website is votevora.com. You can join our campaign over there. You can donate to our campaign. You can help support our new upcoming radio ad. And the radio ad, by the way, that is designed specifically to inform people about jury nullification in a kind of underhanded and indirect way. So those are the things. Follow me on Facebook, follow me wherever, but votevora.com is the center of everything.
Awesome. And how's your campaign going? Do you need donations, volunteers,
anything else? Yes, we need all that stuff. The more we have, the more we can do. And we've designed the campaign to be very linearly scaling. So if we have twice as many volunteers, we do twice as much stuff. We have 100 times as many volunteers, we do 100 times as much stuff. We've been using our donations primarily to print out flyers and door hangers, and we have volunteers all over the country who are putting them out there. So if you want to support those efforts, think of it like this. If you donate, say, $20 to us, that's about 200 door hangers or more, actually. And that means with just that, we can get that message out there to 200 families. That's all the people in that household. Hopefully some of them will be angry enough about our message that they'll tell the other three if a family of four, and if it's a family of 12, even better, we're gonna get that information out there even more. So the donors, if you can support us financially, great. If you can support us with your own manpower, also great.
Awesome, perfect. All right, well, thanks again for coming on the show. It's always a pleasure to have you on, always some great topics, interesting conversation. Go check out the website, go support the campaign, go support the other presidential candidate that I'm running against. He's one of the awesome ones, so he has one of my endorsements, and taxation is theft. We'll see you next time.
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.